Logged On.
Welcome to Logged On, a monthly podcast from Dazed about all things internet culture, from memes to emerging trends, deep web conspiracy theories, and beyond. I'm your host, Gunseli Alchinkaya, and this episode we have a very special guest, Alex Kicho. Alex is a writer and researcher specializing in technology and inhuman narratives such as ghosts and gods and angels in the machine. Her book, Small Gods, is a series of meditations on drone technology and was published by Zero Books in 2021. As for her wide essay, Everyone is a Girl Online, it explores the current girl-coded phenomena taking hold of our feeds through the lens of Takun's seminal 2012 text, Theory of the Young Girl. I personally love Alex's essay, so I really recommend that everyone check this out after this episode. More recently, Alex has written an article for Dazed titled Prey Mode, Why Girls Are Pretending to Be Cute Animals Online, in which she delves into the predator and prey dynamics across social media through memes equating girls to bunnies and bambies, to viral TikTok filters such as the cancel tilt that supposedly determines how attractive you are. So where's this all coming from? Maybe let's start with a recap. So they say that every girl is either cat pretty, bunny pretty, fox pretty, or deer pretty. Or at least that's the word according to TikTok, where countless clips flood our feeds equating girls' faces to one of these four categories. The discourse began with a viral tweet back in March, but quickly made its way onto TikTok, where there's even face filters that help you achieve each animal-coded look. Maybe it's the Gen Z answer to the millennial BuzzFeed quiz, but similar to the La 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 versus OK OK Girl trend earlier this year, equating female faces to cute animals is part of a wider trend across the memescape. There's also a male equivalent, which breaks them down into either a dog, an eagle, a bear, or reptile. And let's not forget everyone's favorite golden retriever boyfriend, black cat girlfriend dichotomy. On one hand, it highlights a desire to categorize and self-mythologize ourselves. This is, to some extent, harmless fun. Like, who doesn't want to be a soft, precious bunny doing girl math while the world is burning? But on the other hand, perhaps there's something deeper afoot. The viral cancel tilt filter helps to determine whether you're more likely to be a predator or prey, supposedly, with the former being seen as more desirable than the other. This also has direct linkage to incel culture and looks maxing forums, which we will dive into later. This also harks back to another social media trend, predator versus hunter eyes, with men desperately asking for help online to change their eye shape. There's even exercises for this shit on TikTok. I don't know whether you want to check that out. It reminds me of yet another trend, doe eyes versus siren eyes, which kind of feels like the girl equivalent and places emphasis on male entrapment using doe eyes that make you appear round and innocent or siren eyes that help to seduce men supposedly by entrapping their souls, much like a predator traps its prey. There's even a term that goes along with this, siren maxing, which is very much an extension of the whole looks maxing incel pipeline that we will delve into shortly. But let's return to baby animals. Cute, bottom of the food chain, or prey animals have been a staple of girl-coded Instagram for some time now. Think angelic memes depicting a fawn with the caption, "This is who you're being mean to," or "Me in my realist form." It's the sort of ethereal, innocent-style posting that's integral to the online girl swarm, the collective girl consciousness that's become a hallmark for 2023 online culture. Beyond social media, prey animals are cropping up all across pop culture, including Burberry and Stella McCartney, and also Harry Lambert's Zara campaign, all starring adorable herbivores such as bunnies, deer, and horses. Now that this imagery is leaking out from social media and into the real world, let's take a look at what it all means.
I mean, I think that, you know, people have been attracted to cuteness since, like, time immemorial. I think that, you know, there's a lot of, I guess, like, biological theorization around, like, why cuteness is appealing. Like, why human babies in particular, for example, have evolved to max out on being cute, so you protect them as being, like, entirely helpless and useless things. Mm-hmm. I don't care about babies that much, though, so let's not linger on that.
But I'm still stick to the animals.
But I'm glad you brought up the fashion example. So There was like a Givenchy collection ages ago that had a kind of ripped split between a Disney Bambi and Antigone. I think I believe a painting of the myth. And I think that was like such an interesting thing that we're seeing like come back around. Like, I think we're seeing so much like Bambi imagery in particular, like, you know, Burberry, like you said, Burberry deer print collections over the past few years. Like loads of Miu Miu stuff with like baby deer on them, like really twinned, I think, with, I guess, houses that want to like think about that, not just cuteness, but this preyness. Mm-hmm. And I think that Givenchy collection in particular blended the Bambi imagery with like the big Rottweiler Doberman jaws. Like,
oh, I remember
really,
this now. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that maybe was like cooking in the back of my mind when I was writing this, because of this, I guess, of seeing prey and predator as things that have, that contain like equal intensities of desire. The end of the piece that I wrote for you looks into how, I guess, I want to move away from thinking about like this prey mode thing as being in any way empowering or something. Not that I don't think empowerment or whatever is important, but I think that, you know, with memes and stuff, sometimes people are just interested in something that's unfolding. The prey mode thing is something like ancient, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that on the incel side of things, they are thinking about a very simplistic view of the world that is useful for them, like wanting to become more predator-like, therefore more successful, whether that's sexually or financially. I think for these dudes, those things go hand in hand,
it's financial,
right?
Gain.
Yeah. Whereas I think that, like, on the other side, this idea of like siren and doe eyes, that trend in particular was about seeing both of those things as useful, seeing being absolutely lethal as something that you can, you know, use to your advantage, but also seeing doe eyes in particular as something that allows things to come closer to you. And obviously, in like femme talk, girl talk, that also is perhaps oversimplified in a, like, just attractiveness. You know, people on TikTok and on the internet in general love to think about, like, ways that they can make themselves more attractive to other people. But interestingly, with the second example, there isn't a rejection of prey mode. But the reason why I really liked it and found it interesting is that, you know, what happens if you're not afraid of being prey, if you are a Bambi and you have no aspiration to become the lion or the wolf or whatever, what if you just like being Bambi, and like, what does it mean to like enjoy that position? And towards the end of the essay, I talk a lot about, you know, other expressions of wanting to be like eaten alive as like a form of devotion. And I guess that's why I was thinking about the Givenchy example, because it was like the Bambis and the Jaws were like coexisting in the same collection. So it's like, what if you appreciate both? You're not just frolicking in the meadow. You're kind of also surrendering to this desire to be fully consumed.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've written a lot about girl theory, and it'd be quite, yeah, I think it'd be good to hear, like, from your perspective, how do you think it kind of relates to the wider girl theory that you're kind of constructing?
Yeah, totally. So I think, to recap for anyone who hasn't read the essay, like, the Girls Online essay looks at the girl as a particular technology of subjectivity. And what I mean by that is that it's like it's a thing that comes, that like arrives into you, that is not necessarily you. So I think that the piece has been bastardized by people who just want to talk about it in the sense of like femme aesthetics, which it is a dimension of it, but isn't it,
yeah,
full stop.
That's a very big question.
Yeah. And it's not about biology either. Like, the big part of the piece is that everyone is a girl, right? And so we were thinking about that in parallel with cuteness, in that like cuteness can be sort of like a tactic that is weaponized, or that it can provide like almost like a Trojan horse effect, where you use cuteness to smuggle in something else, whether that is like, I think from my thinking, this idea with like trends and fashion, like cuteness can be an accelerant in terms of whipping up people's interest in something. But I think for the philosophy heads, there's like many other dimensions in terms of like how cuteness can shield or intensify different elements of someone's like position in the world. And so I think in parallel, the girl and the cute are both these like potentially like lethal forms of subject that aren't necessarily connected to anything that you might already have. So they're not connected to you being like biologically female or you having rounded cute features. Like it's not about what you're born with. It's about things that you can essentially max out in how you appear or in your mannerisms or in how you might engage with things like attention-based platforms, etc., that can then develop this form of attraction that is then useful for you. And so that's sort of what I was going into with the girl's essay. But I think when we think about, like, you know, you wrote an amazing piece about the e-girlification of warfare.
Thank you. Yeah, I guess it's like a similar thing in that regard, kind of using that as like, as you said, like a Trojan horse to, I mean, in that case, more nefarious colonial undertones. But
exactly. And I think that's a big dimension of it, right? And that it's like the Tikkun's piece, like in the book, they talk about the girl as both a living currency and a war machine. And I don't think those elements have got, that book was written in the 90s. I think those elements of girl subjectivity have only intensified. And we do see that in the military, like how the military's presence online, especially the U.S. Army and IDF, like two of the most terrifying militaries in the world, are really boosted by essentially like thirst-trapping girl soldiers who adopt like e-girl aesthetics. So,
yeah, exactly.
And e-girl aesthetics are very predicated on like the cute, like they themselves transpose like anime. Like, so there's like layers to which that attraction is intensified and then made lethal in that like psyop sense.
No, completely. And I guess it kind of links back to what we're talking about in that, yeah, I feel like a lot of those anime aesthetics which have been weaponized come from like 2chan and 4chan. And a lot of, I guess, the stuff which we're seeing with all the kind of animal, like, what animal are you kind of things also do have roots, I guess, kind of very, like, incel adjacent. I mean, like, one example that comes into my brain, like, that kind of recent, like, guys trying to get predator eyes and that being very kind of linked to look maxing. And how would you describe looks maxing, actually?
I think that, oh my God, I'm so glad you asked. I think, again, it's something that originated in, like, incel culture that has then sort of been, like, almost, like, drawn up into other parts of culture, whether people are aware that it's an incel term or not. I think there's a layer of irony as well.
Yeah.
But there's also, like, femcel or femcel-adjacent forums for anyone who's not in that world. Femcel is, like, female incel.
Yeah, yeah.
Called, like, I think the big one's, like, Splendida. There's another one called, like, Invictus. They have, like, these crazy names.
Damn, I need to check them out. Do I? I don't even know.
I follow them because they're kind of fascinating because they have this, like, layer of, like, hyper-pragmatism about how the world is stacked. And a big part of that is what I would call, like, almost, like, heteropessimism. Sorry, we're, like, throwing out a lot of terms here. But heteropessimism, essentially this idea that, like, no straight relation can be removed from a sort of a depressing patriarchal reality. So how are you going to navigate that? There's no such thing as a utopian straight relationship.
Yeah.
Which I think is totally valid.
Yeah, I think that checks out, to be honest.
Yeah. And so a lot of these, so yeah, that is a huge aside. Looks maxing basically in both these contexts is about like being really dedicated and focused to how you are externally attractive to people. And so I think most of them will divide it between soft looks maxing. So things like makeup, grooming, working out, even things like mewing, which was really
which actually works, right?
Which works.
Yeah, if anyone wants to kind of look further into that, Joshua Citarella has a great report on his mewing progress. It's essentially like kind of using various methods to get a stronger jawline. A lot of people use gum, like the specific, I think it's Turkish gum actually, that you can use, which is like has a particularly hard texture. But yeah, like people have been kind of documenting. This is the thing, because ultimately like a lot of this like pseudoscience, and it is like pseudoscience and that hasn't been like scientifically proven to work. But whereas some of it is just kind of like sunning your balls and like ridiculous, there are others which I guess just as any kind of unproven thing, which we I guess looked at in the last episode with weirdness, there are some things that kind of bypass the structures of the scientific method.
Yeah. And like that, it's, I think that that dimension of essentially like kind of like patchy citizen science at scale.
That's literally it.
And I think that like obviously the incels have cottoned onto that, but I think that even at a really like everyday sense, like that's what girls are doing with like beauty reviews. And how even like recursive that is, that a lot of companies will like redevelop products based on like how like thousands of people have talked about it or spoken about it online. But I think that the other side of the soft looks maxing is hard looks maxing, which is really like surgical, basically. Mm-hmm. And the what I find fascinating about that is the kind of glamorization of like the ugliness of surgery. I don't know if you've ever seen this stuff, but the like post-op TikToks.
Like, do people, I'm not actually familiar with that side of TikTok, to be honest.
I am like addicted to TikTok.
Go on, share for the audience. What have you found?
But like obviously a very particular, it has shaped itself in, it shapes itself in your image. Mm-hmm. So obviously it is addicting because it starts surfacing deeper and deeper. If you have a brain that likes to go deep on stuff, it'll give you finer and finer cuts of stuff you're
obsessed with.
Exactly. And so I think in the process of researching the girl thing, I started interacting more with like hard looks maxing. And it got to the point where I was getting videos of girls showing like pieces of bone they'd had removed from their face. Like, and they, the best, my favorite one, but also made me feel like totally nauseated, was these two besties went and got jaw reduction surgery in South Korea. And it's like all these photos of them like holding hands in like different stages of the... But then it shows literally parts of their jaws.
I mean, it's kind of cute that they're doing it together, but at the same time, I feel very conflicted.
It's really hardcore. I always talk about how it's like, it's not often... I mean, obviously, it's tricky to valorize, but this idea of allowing someone to kind of surgically, like, to open your body up and change it to that extent. Not just the commitment to it, but also, like, how hardcore it is, like, to endure that much pain because you want to appear a certain way.
Yeah.
Kind of underrated.
No, completely. I've been looking into bone smashing a lot recently.
Bone smashing? Yeah. Tell me more.
I mean, for those who aren't familiar at all, it's basically like another fad within incel culture, which started off as a joke, I think, as with most things online. And then, like, guys are, like, literally, like, punching themselves in the face or, like, quote-unquote smashing their jaws to get, like, I think it all, like, links back to getting, like, a stronger jaw structure or a stronger jawline. But, like, there's literally, like, reports on Reddit of, like, guys being like, oh, I punched my face 5 times every morning and, like, these are my results.
And what?
No, it's actually, like, insane.
That's crazy.
Because I feel like that's happening adjacent to, I guess, like, the predator-prey kind of discourse at the same time. And, like, loads of men are kind of going online wanting, like, predator eyes, which is essentially looking like a sexy cheetah. For those who don't know, I guess it's, like, the kind of, like, deep-set, very, like, long, narrow, like, eye shape, I suppose, compared to prey, which would be more kind of, like, circular. There's loads of kind of TikToks, like, for those who want to kind of dive further into that. But I think one thing we've also seen, which you touch on in your prey mode essay as well, is the cancel tilt. And so it's essentially a viral TikTok filter that puts a red line across your face. Again, this kind of like goes back to 4chan and incel culture. But the idea is that if it's like an upwards line, that's a good thing. If it's a downwards line, that's like a bad thing. I think it's just like kind of seeing that red pilled, like these red pilled ideas like seeping into the mainstream, which I find very interesting. Whereas like previously they were kind of a more like hyper dedicated forums, we're now seeing them go viral on TikTok and spread out from what used to be like a very small like pocket, or not small, like a pocket of online male culture, now kind of intercepting like every aspect of our lives. One thing I found interesting about your essay, because you do kind of lay out this kind of predator and prey dynamic, maybe you can kind of go into a bit more detail about that before we dive into the analysis.
Totally. So in prey mode, I think that we begin with the Canthal tilt vulture because it stood out to me in that there was a sort of in classic incel fashion, a positivity and negativity assigned to different results, which is so different from things like bunny pretty or deer pretty, where it essentially is designed to make everyone appreciate their own features, but categorize them in a way that makes things like makeup styles suit your face. So there's like different dynamics at play here. I think the incel coded stuff is about sorting people into hierarchies, and that's why there's so much history with these things as they're related to things like physiognomy and all these other sort of like essentially colonial practices of sorting and categorizing people and then deciding whether those people deserve essentially humanity. And like that's the fucked up side of it, obviously, right? And I think that's why incels are so attached to it, because they are obsessed with the fact that they're in essentially a lower social standing, and they need to kind of believe in this kind of structural composition of society that is whatever pilled and will allow them, by believing in that structure, they can then feel like they can navigate it and eventually get to a point in their lives where they're not an incel anymore, right? Mm. Like that's the whole mythology around it. Because you have a demographic that obviously are just using it and feeling very attached to the results, and demographics that are just like, just see it as another game. Like to be predator or prey is just like another stupid like
that's the thing. I feel like, yeah, with like all meme things, obviously there's that balance of like irony and sincerity, and like you see a lot of people with like the filter being like, it's so over, I have like a downward tilt, but obviously there is kind of maybe think like kind of harmful like connotations to that. But I feel like that's kind of the same with like any kind of put your face on a camera and stare at it for long enough kind of situation anyway. I guess like one thing I find interesting about it is kind of scientific language and like methodologies behind it. So if you look at like stuff like similar to the Canthal tilt, like when you go back to hunter eyes, the kind of like language they use is like kill a long chin, like long vertical ramus, like gonial angle of like approx, like 120 degrees. I just said like a bunch of like weird words string together, but all of it like cloaks itself in this like pseudo kind of official like science speak. And for me, I'm like interested in what effect that could have on like the way that we both like perceive our bodies and our digital selves. But also like how this kind of language is infiltrating, yeah, just like generally this kind of discourse surrounding like beauty standards. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that part of the, what I was getting at with the FemCell forums too, is that this kind of like blank pilled relationship to life, I think ultimately links into what I was talking about in the girl essay about how, so one of my central arguments is that the way that platforms are designed, like legacy social media platforms, are basically ad tech. And for them to function, there needs to be both, there needs to be categorization, first of all, and that finely detailed categorization, it needs to produce affect at scale, aka virality, and that's how you know that you are successfully navigating that platform. For that reason, I kind of make this argument that everyone's a girl if they are engaging with those things on face level, because of a bunch of philosophical concepts I pack in that essay. But what's useful here is to think about like how much that has infiltrated, or I guess made more visible, how people are like thinking about this kind of pseudoscientific stuff, anything that involves taxonomy, categorization of something as like ineffable as beauty, is like wild to me. And the fact that it is happening in parallel to, I guess, millennial representation and acceptance and positivity discourse. So there's this kind of dueling thing where like in the real world, the more there's a kind of like diffuse idea of what beauty is in a good way. Like I've definitely feel healthier about my face now than I did 10 years ago. I think there's people kind of doubling down or like confused by that diffusion online. Therefore, this kind of really basic, you know, how do I decide which, whether the arrangement of my facial structure is like pleasing or not. People wanting to attach hard numbers to that, specific angles, specific categories, helps them kind of wade through this ambiguity of beauty, ironically reinforcing things that I think we've tried to move away from forever. Mm. So, but I think ultimately it's because people understand now very clearly, if they're like a social media user, full stop, like how powerful beauty is. Like, beauty is absolutely currency on social media. If you're attractive, you get more interaction. Therefore, your platform and audience increases. Obviously, we know from the past 10 years of platform reality, that is often the goal of even existing on these platforms, even if you're a regular person.
Yeah.
So people do see beauty as the only way to access that. And that is regardless of gender. To be not attractive means to maybe have a Twitter personality.
Yeah.
But other than that.
No, it's also, yeah, like, I know, I guess with all the kind of information like hitting us constantly, it's like, otherwise, like, if you're not pretty, like, I guess the idea would be that you sink to the bottom of the scroll and therefore you're not like optimized in the kind of rules or law of the algorithm.
Yeah, one thing I want to add to that is also like something that is maybe most interesting to me about this that I feel somewhat ambivalent about or want to see what is happening is that this like hyper-categorization of like facial features and how people are designing their faces essentially is the fact that it is inseparable from, for a lot of what we witness online anyway, inseparable from how the machine sees you essentially is like, is what we're coming up with a redesign of our features for like a machine, for machine vision.
Yeah.
It's sort of designed towards how other people are attracted to you and want to interact with your face. But as we all know, there's a difference between how you might exude attractiveness in space and like in front of another person with charisma or whatever versus how you actually are presented online. And we know that, you know, from even 10 years ago, like how, like Instagram face, for example. But the more finely tuned that happens and the more that the actual, like you said, this amazing detail of like how people are even taking like cosmetic surgical terms and like layman understanding what that even means to kind of like max out how their face appears and then is categorized. It's like, yeah, what happens, what will happen to that style of beauty if that level of detail is actually the level of detail that the machine is assessing and capturing? It's obviously not one-to-one, but there's this kind of interesting relationship there. So are we producing our faces for an inhuman, like for the desire of something inhuman as opposed to for the desire of other people, if those other people are actually only coming to you via a kind of algorithmic structure?
Yeah, I feel like there's a transhumanist aspect to it as well. So we're performing for the machine while becoming the machine. But in doing that, yeah, like as you said, it does take away that kind of human aspect of it all. And in a way, like I do get like a bit, not disturbed, that's probably the wrong word, but I guess like the use of, like, I think in the last few years, and we touched on this in the last episode, like, we have seen a kind of distrust of, like, official media narratives, science narratives. And I guess, like, at the kind of expense of that, people are kind of gravitating towards their own kind of scientific conclusions. But when that is paired with kind of performing for the algorithm, I think there's maybe a blind spot that occurs. And so we're kind of creating these, like, pseudo-scientific narratives of, like, what beauty is, while at the same time kind of performing and harping towards this very like homogenized idea of what beauty is as well, because like what I find beautiful like IRL is very different to maybe like what the algorithm says my face should look like. It's interesting, this kind of desire for categorization, and like obviously that's not like anything new. We've seen that with like mimetic identities all the way through, like maybe harping back to like 2016 Politigram, when you got like teenagers being like, hey, I'm a narco ecological, like, blah, 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 like, insert, like, political, like, micro-identity here. I guess, like, the progression we've seen now at the expense of there being, like, no kind of political, like, potential on the horizon, we've seen this distill into more kind of aesthetic categories, more, like, vibe-based, like, affect-based trends. So I know, like, one thing that came into my head was, like, the golden retriever boyfriend and the black cat girlfriend, or, like, even when you look at, like, sociosexual, like male hierarchical structures with like sigma males, like alpha males, beta males, like whatever, like zeta males, I think also exists.
Really?
Yeah, apparently so. That was like a quick one and kind of came and went like a few years ago. I was watching for it, but I think sigma is still on its grind set.
A big part of why I'm interested in like the prey subjectivity is like this idea of like evasion.
Yes.
Like, how do you avoid capture? And like capture not just being like being physically like held down to something, but also about like stuff in your life that you don't want to be captured by something like a ad tech based platform, for example, or by like neoliberal ideology or by like marketers. Like, how do you actually like protect that? And I think a big part of it for me, like, is that this idea of like evading, like a big advantage of thinking about prey mode in a very intentional sense, not as just something that like the incels are afraid of and want to reject, but to think, you know, if you are like a little Bambi or a bunny rabbit or something, like those animals are also incredibly instinctive about mm-hmm. protecting themselves and often about like kind of running with knowledge of who's alongside you. And I think that that's really cool.
It's interesting for me, at least, because like this whole predator prey, like dynamic duality, like neither of them are one way or the other. I feel like they're both quite neutral categories. It kind of depends like what we then do like to act upon them, or like kind of let them act upon us, perhaps. That kind of determines like what direction they go. But at the same time, I think it's important to acknowledge as well, like even though a lot of this is happening online, the way that the algorithm does categorize our behavior, or to kind of flip the script, and the way that we have a desire to categorize ourselves in tandem with the algorithm affects our like actual physical lives as well. And I feel like that maybe kind of gets overlooked sometimes.
Totally. I think that the even at the most basic level, these things are like platforms and existence are like recursive. Mm-hmm. So a platform architecture, I think that it is really delusional to assume that the architecture of the platform does not reshape reality in some way. I think, you know, everything from how our cities are reshaped around Amazon logistics, for yeah. example, like the fact that we have ghost kitchens now because of the existence of Deliveroo and people wanting more food ran to their door, that all the way down to people taking really fine-tuned examples of like optimal face architecture and wanting to apply that to how to their own appearance, because it's going to play better in terms of what the algorithm categorizes as desirable and will therefore float to the top, I think is really you know, an evergreen thing to think about. I think that that is something we'll never get away from, even if you resist. I don't know why you'd be listening to this if you don't like digital culture. But even the most like
Luddite, log off.
But even the most sort of like Luddite type person who is resisting this will still eventually end up on the receiving end of something as simple as absorbing a beauty standard environmentally. Mm-hmm. That will still be constructed by a whole industry that is paying attention to what is happening on these platforms and what it's doing to our faces.
Yeah.
And I think you and I have talked about like things like in incel culture floating into mainstream culture. I think this is a big part of it. Incel culture has always been insanely pragmatic to like a terrifying degree about attractiveness and its instrumentalization. Unfortunately, I think more people are beginning to see that as truth, as they see beauty as something that isn't just about something that passes between human to human, for example, but beauty is often now something that is experienced in conversation with the machine, not even just being like, oh, I want the algorithm to, I want to appear attractive so that I'm boosted in the algorithm, but now it's fully a conversation. I think anyone thinking about their face now and things like makeup or appearance, even like really mask dudes, if they're thinking about stuff like, oh, do I look alpha or predatory enough? This is all constructed with essentially like algorithmic categories in mind. So, mm-hmm. you know, everyone wants the machine to desire them.
But I believe that's all we have time for. But thank you so much, Alex, for joining the podcast. This is Logged On. Don't forget to like, subscribe, listen wherever you listen to your podcasts, and see you on the next episode.
Logged On.